Last week we began the lecture series, The Far Reaches of Heart and Mind. And we briefly mapped out the unconscious according to Freud and Jung. And in this map of the unconscious, we find, or the map of the mind, as it were, we find, first of all, of course, the conscious world of our focus and attention. And for the most part, our life is spent on attending to what is now, or at least trying to, as much as we can. We focus on a person, a place, or a thing, or a group, an object of study, and that is what is called the conscious mind. Okay? But Freud and Jung also taught us of other layers of the mind, taught us of a personal unconscious. And the personal unconscious are all of those memories, forgotten memories, if you, that have affected us in a deep way and are still are affecting us, even though they are forgotten to our conscious mind. Memories. Forgotten memories. The third, there's another level of conscious life before we even get to the personal unconscious. We spoke briefly about, and that's the preconscious. You remember the preconscious mind. And that is simply all of that memory bank inside of you that remembers things and facts. And if someone gives you a word, you'll immediately associate it with the number of facts and words. It may or may not have emotional impact. Okay? So you have the conscious, preconscious, personal unconscious, and finally, of course, the collective unconscious. And the collective unconscious are all of those universal memories of humanity, universal values of humanity, the universal concepts of humanity, which can be located in sacred stories or the world religions, can be located in general structures, the way we see the universe. And this collective unconscious is where we get, of course, where we inherit concepts like God or concepts, symbols, concepts like angel, universal concepts like the lover or the warrior, mother, father, hero, innocent, orphan, child, the wanderer. All of us have these within our psyche. It is the bedrock, if you will, of our psyche, is the collective unconscious. This is where the spiritual values are distilled, where the spiritual values rest that have been in the soul of humanity since its beginning. Now, we can't get to the personal unconscious or the collective unconscious without relaxing our ego, our hold, our control of the world. Now, the point, of course, is to go into the personal unconscious, to allow the collective unconscious to emerge and integrate with our conscious life. I say integrate with our conscious life. Right? We can become mentally or emotionally ill when either the personal unconscious rules us totally or the collective unconscious rules us totally. Or if we live in the conscious realm without ever attending to the personal unconscious or collective unconscious, the result, of course, will be mental and emotional illness. I would say even spiritual. What is worse is spiritual illness. You know, spiritual illness is when we lose sight. We forget. We forget our divine destiny. Or we forget the interplay of energies within ourselves that are divinely male and divinely female within ourselves. And if we do not attend to those, of course, the dark side, if you will, or the negative side, I'd rather use that word, the negative side can emerge and rule us in a destructive way. We talked last week also about the life script, you remember? And the life script we make between the ages of 1 and 10. Our personal life script. We look upon our world. We see the way it is operating. We're sponges from age 0 to 10. And it has been suggested that this life script is made for us by age 10. That means that every experience beyond age 10 is a replay or a reaction to the life script. So we don't really do anything new. We come to new places, we meet quote-unquote new people, we have new opportunities, but we do the same old things depending upon the life script. But I also ended with last week, there is also, I believe, a positive life script, if you will, a divine life script that we, each of us, have that has to do with our destiny. And if we do not attend to that life script, we won't understand why we're here on this planet, why we are here for such a short time. And these are the hidden, if you will, the hidden yearnings and longings for us and by us, deep within our soul. Gandhi once called prayer the longing for God. It is those longings that exist within us that if they don't meet some satisfaction, those longings aren't given attendance and nurturing, we certainly can become spiritually ill. Doesn't that make sense? And I think that's why many of us are on a search. We are seekers, if you will. We are seekers for the divine within us and without us and among us, above and below. We are seekers. Seekers in every corner of the divine trace where we have lost our memory. And we probably began losing our memory of our divine script between the same ages of 1 and 10 when we took on the, if you will, the negative or limiting life script around us. One life script would be, for instance, as a young boy, I noticed I am surrounded by pain. I need to protect everybody here from that pain. So my whole life, I live life in that recorded message. Okay. And if I don't live according to that script, if I don't rescue someone from their pain, what am I going to feel? Extreme guilt if I've inherited that particular life script. Just give you an example. On the other hand, I certainly remember a divine life script that I touched upon that was part of my collective, which is also a part of your collective, because the collective unconscious is about us all. And that has sort of, what I would call the experience of the mediator between the divine realms and the human realms that can be symbolized by the priest or the rabbi or the priestess or the minister. I know that since I've been a little boy, that image has struck me profoundly. And it was deeper than all the neurotic expressions of that. Or the sick expressions of that. It was deeper than that. But I knew as a little boy when I was in church and saw the priest, you know, raising up the host, the communion, the Eucharist, the body and blood of Jesus. and bending down in reverence. I knew that this was something about us all. I didn't know how to express it, but I knew that it was something about us all. That something within ourselves, it was an archetype, if you will. It was a universal concept that I was seeing outside being played. That was about this communication between the human and divine realms. And I think each of us have an inner guide, an inner mediator. And what happens sometimes is we project all of that onto someone else or something else, and we don't think that we have it within ourselves. And that's where the danger lies. Or we over-identify with that, because there are many, many in the divine realm within. There are many, many archetypes or universal concepts or universal symbols. And if we over-identify with one or under-identify with another, we can get into problems too. Or we can also be ruled by the superficial or surface understanding of the archetype, which I hope to give you a couple of examples in the mother and the lover at the end of our time today. We can get caught up in superficial expressions of the archetype, and we will live thwarted emotional and spiritual lives. We will never grow out, if you will, of those surface and superficial understandings and perceptions of those deep interior symbols. What's so powerful today, I see, is that we are beginning to become seekers once again. Even though we have all this data, all of this information, right? Even though we have all of the religions displayed before us, even though we have elegant theological systems and philosophical systems displayed before us, even though we have done so much in the arena of science and physics, I sense that there is a disturbing kind of movement going on in the core of all of our souls, whereby we are wanting to search once again for authenticity. And we realize that that search for authenticity, the nobleness of heart and soul, must be a search at in some level that goes within, deeply within. Today, I would like to speak of dreams. What a wonderful thing to do on a day of celebration, whether it's Friday for Muslims, or Saturday for Jews, or Sunday for Christians, or even some Sundays like this very strange place where we universally honor all three. But what a wonderful time it seems to me to honor the realm of dreams. Dreams, I can't begin to share with you what dreams have come to mean to me, but I do know that just as when my ego has relaxed and I've allowed a lot of the material or painful memories to surface, which I've integrated into the world, right, from the personal unconscious, and that have empowered me as a self. At the same level, in a very obvious way, our ego relaxes when we dream. The most obvious relaxing of the ego occurs when we're sleeping. Our ego is not under control. But there is an awakened world and an alive world that exists within our dreams. And one of the arts, or one of the sciences, if you will, in spirituality, is being able to begin translating the hieroglyph, or the language of dreams, because they are teachers. They teach us. And all the world religions, of course, have a dream language. The religions of the Middle East, the Semitic religions of Christianity, Judaism, and Islam, certainly have a language of dreams. The Egypt has a language of dreams. Greece, ancient Greece, a language of dreams. The Orient has a language of dreams. And there are different levels of dreams. What I thought I would do today is give you five categories of dreams that I have experienced either through my own personal experience, through my study with clients or through my own studies of dream scholars. And the reason why I think this would be an important thing to do today is if we are talking about the far reaches of mind and heart, if we are talking about the collective unconscious and the symbols and the archetypes, we have to talk about, we have to look at dreams. I don't know about you, but dreams have been scary for me. I sometimes have been very frightened by the dream world. So I thought by giving you sort of types of dreams, it would allow you to begin differentiating in your own experience so they won't be so frightening. Dreams are no longer my enemies. They have become my friends and teachers. Even though some of my dreams are very disturbing, so they are very frightening, they have become teachers for me. And now I understand why David was a dream interpreter for Solomon. And I understand why even in the ancient religions there were always artists of dreams, because that was part of the inner world of the spirit, of the psyche. It was a place where God spoke, because the ego was not so much in control. God speaks through the window where we don't control. Wherever we control, over control, I'm really trying to say, wherever we're trying to grab hold of something, probably God isn't there. Because that's our own sense of insecurity and fear, wanting things to be, you know, just so, right? It seems to me that God or the divine always enters through the hole that I don't control. And dreams are one of those. Although I know that there's a whole scholarly realm of dreams where one even controls the dreams. But since I don't know about that part, I'm not going to speak about that part. I'm more sort of reverentially relating to my dreams. And I've begun to respect the dreams that my clients bring to me. And they have widened my perspective of this world of dreams. Okay? And some of the dreams emerge from the personal unconscious, others from the underpinning, from the collective, and some from both. Dreams, the living world of sleep. It has been said that a dream presents itself to consciousness is a deep lesson we need to learn for ourselves. If we do not remember, by the way, don't worry. Dream scholars say if you don't remember your dreams, they're probably working them out themselves, or you wouldn't understand it anyway, so don't worry. Okay? And we can cultivate, of course, and prepare ourselves by taking an interest in dreams, certainly through journaling, or through before we go to sleep, telling ourselves that we wish to hear and remember our dreams. But please, if you don't, please, you go out and you buy a journal, tonight you put it by your bedstand and said, Neil said, I'm going to remember my dreams, and then in the morning you don't remember a thing. You can do all you want to do to prepare for dreams, but unless they want to get in touch with you, they ain't. Okay? So I've learned to respect that process, and I can do all the preparing in the world, but when dreams are ready, they will certainly appear. An important book, I think, that I had not read yet, but I read a book review of, sounds fascinating, called Sacred Sleep, Dreams and the Divine by Scott Cunningham. The book review speaks of exploring the spiritual dimension of dreams in the religious traditions of Egypt, the Middle East, Greece, Rome, Hawaii, and North America. Cunningham sees dreams as a means of recovering our personal religion, something that the dominant religious traditions of Western society have long suppressed. And this is true. When I grew up, and the first time the dream got my attention was, of course, through the nightmare. And I ran to my mother and father's bedroom screaming about my nightmare, and they came outside and said, sweetheart, it's only a dream. That, to me, is a perfect summary of Western knowledge of the dream world. Perfect summary. Where the parents hear the child's dream and they shut it off. They disclose it. Don't worry. They devalue it. They minimize it. But this first type of dream, which I might call the nightmare, has a lot of different areas to it. And I'm only going to briefly move through this. But I just wanted to tell all of you, once you have, you begin having the nightmare, it is about beginning the healing. Okay? It's about beginning the healing. The most frequent that I receive in my practice are flashbacks of past traumas. These are real historical events that have happened, so overwhelming for the self that it pops into consciousness or recurs at a time when the person needs to be working on it. It can be physical abuse or abuse of any sort. It can be stress caused by separation, divorce, death, or physical illness. And children will have them. The classic nightmare is what I'm talking about. It may not be historically accurate, every detail. It may be partially historically accurate. But emotionally, it is accurate. Emotionally, it is accurate. So I say to all parents, when your children knock on your door and they're frightened by a nightmare, they could be in touch with material that you're not even in touch with because you've suppressed. They could be in touch with a lot of emotions of fear, fear of abandonment, fear that not as all well with the family. Okay? Just being physically ill. And their dreams are telling them, expressing what they're not expressing in the world. Okay? So, the nightmare. The nightmare can be partially real about something in the past that I have experienced, but it's so painful, I've developed a strategy to forget it. And it will sort of symbolically come into the dream world, very exaggerated and oftentimes very scary. And that's the first type of dream. Okay? Type two. And I believe the first type, by the way, is about the personal unconscious. But it can be something that has to do with the collective unconscious, but more about that later, next week probably. But type two are dreams of future events yet to occur. I have spoken with clients. I have not had these dreams. I've had the deja vu experience, but there are different theories about dreams of the future. But I have spoken with clients, young and older, who have had dreams of events yet to occur, and I would say this would be the second category. Clients have told me of dreams which they have had, which eventually happen in the future. Now, there is one theory that suggests that the deja vu, we have all been here before, is more than just the loop of a past tape that plays again instantaneously, where we feel that this experience has already happened and familiar. There is a theory that suggests that this experience of familiarity is due to its already having occurred prior to our experience in our dreams. An or even more far out theory suggests that it may be a faint memory of a past life script. I guess what we need to do in this regard is recognize that the realm of dreams are highly sophisticated. But there is a second type which deals with a sense of the future. I would also say that there is also a type that is within this realm, but deeper in the collective unconscious, about our potentials, our future possibilities. These are wonderful. They're about living out that divine life script of ours. The third type of dream is what I would call a compensation or balance dream. If I'm feeling confined or unhappy in my life, nobody here, of course, I might dream of flying or a dream of feeling unhindered. That's what I would call the balance dream or the compensatory dream or the compensation dream. On the other hand, if I'm wandering in my life with no direction, free spirit. I remember I did that years ago. I hitchhiked through Europe and North Africa for about 4 months. before I began studies in philosophy, etc. I was in the wandering. I was really moved by the wanderer archetype. You know, I had a kind of hatred for stability. A disdain for authority. So I got my backpack, you know, and my long hair, and went off for 4.5 months. And what a journey I did move through. When one is caught by this, by the wanderer archetype, one may dream, if you're dreaming a compensatory dream or a balanced dream, dream of stability, marriage, commitment. I mean, tell you, it was right. You know, so a compensation dream, you can one way or the other. You know, if you're needing stability in your life, the dream will tell you. You need stability. If you're needing to loosen up and spontaneity, the dream will tell you. If you're unfree in your life and unhindered. And these are, I think, more of the simple nature of dreams, and the ones that I most, I think, aren't really that difficult to figure out. Type 4 is a deeper, more profound dream. And I would say type 4 would be a visitation by a loved one who has passed on. Visitation dreams. One theory is that it is an actual symbolic presentation in our dream of a loved one who has passed but who cannot reach us easily in the conscious world, but can reach us in the dream world because our ego is relaxed. Another theory is that the dream of our deceased loved one is just unresolved material and issues that we have with this person that we've never worked out, and we need to do this in order to move on with our lives. I have had the visitation dreams, certainly from my father, who died in 1982. And there's no way to really, quote unquote, know scientifically whether or not it is actually my father coming into my dreams. Symbolically, his energy coming into my dreams, wherever he happens to be in this dimension. But I have no doubt that my father was in my dream. Right? And so that's important material. So even in its most minimal scientific understanding, I look at that dream seriously because it's unresolved material unresolved issues I have with my father. Okay, and that would be type 4. So, and I think this can occur with houses that we have a lot of connection to and love for, animals that we've been best friends. So it's not only about parents, or about children that we've lost. Okay, but it's about everything that we've lost can reoccur in our dream. And what that is telling us is we need to grieve this loss. We need to look at this loss so that we can move on in our life. Because we're looking back. We're not looking back, but we're governed by what's back there. Does that make sense? The dream of this type, where something that we've lost comes into our consciousness, is telling us we need to deal with this because we're living our life still back there. But yet we're not conscious of it in our daily life. The last type, type 5, that I've noticed are what I would call more the... They're all spiritual dreams, but I would call this last type the most obvious spiritual dream that is about our wholeness, discovering our wholeness. Do you ever have any dreams that reveal characters who you may have met, you may know very well or maybe not know in the conscious world? There is a theory, this is sort of a Jungian theory, and I found this very helpful in my own dream therapy as well as with my clients, that these figures are fragmented parts of ourselves seeking wholeness. So they're all us, and they're fragmented parts of ourselves that are seeking integration. The 50-year-old male may dream of witches. And a Jungian interpreter would say, you've been neglecting your inner feminine. And if you neglect the inner feminine, a witch she will become.
you know.
It is about the neglected inner feminine. And if the inner feminine, hell hath no fury than the inner feminine scorned. Sort of a paraphrase, of course, of Shakespeare. But at an inner spiritual level, we cannot scorn the inner feminine within us, whether we happen to be in our gender, our sexuality, male or female. There's an inner feminine within us all. Okay, and that will come up in our dreams. Or the woman who dreams of an aggressor with a gun or explosives, who in her life is very passive and feels very helpless. That has something to do, too, with this compensation balance dream I was talking about. But if they're the actual characters that bubble up, if you will, and begin having have personas, are these archetypes that I'm talking about, and they have a personality to them. This type of dream also includes the presentation of sacred figures, or what I would call inner guides, who can teach us what and how we need to integrate neglected parts of ourselves. And I find these the most interesting in the therapy that I do in this area. Looking at these recurring, powerful, sort of sacred figures and see how they are telling us about parts of ourselves. They're powerful universal concepts. They're also universal images. David Fontana has called them universal concepts. I would say, even more strongly, they're universal images of hero, lover, mother, father, wanderer, orphan, child. Okay? So these are five types. Is this helpful? Some of you might be thinking, what is he talking about all this on Sunday? Sounds kind of weird and new age to me. Actually, it's old age. You know, it's old age. It's not new age. But we're beginning to take a look at some of these things. I mean, if we are going to be explorers and of the inner self, don't you think that it's time that we have a little respect for this place? You know. Now, a word of caution. We can get stuck in surface versions of the archetypes in our conscious life, which can result in mental and emotional illness and impede our spiritual maturity. I told you about one when I got caught by the wanderer archetype. I mean, people can spend their whole lives if they get dunked in an archetype and don't really learn about balance in their life and integration. We can get slam dunked by an archetype. Okay? And it can happen in all sorts of different places. I would like to just mention two today, and next week it's going to get real interesting. But two today that I would like to talk about are the lover archetype and the mother archetype, it being Mother's Day. Okay? Now, the lover archetype, the surface version of the lover archetype, I see a lot of people getting caught up in. Of course, I never did. No, of course, I'm fibbing. I have been chased around by the adolescent boy lover archetype for more years than I would have liked. And, of course, there's an adolescent girl lover, adolescent boy lover archetype. And what happens is we get stuck emotionally and spiritually if we get under the spell of this archetype. Let me give you just the symptoms. Boy meets girl, or boy meets boy. I mean, it doesn't have to, girl meets girl. It doesn't have to be one gender, obviously. But one lover meets another lover, and they see the ideal. The archetype is right before them. The ideal lover, which exists within. It's here, right? It's here. Unconditional love. Right? The honeymoon stage. Whether one is actually on a honeymoon or not, there is a honeymoon stage. Totally connected. I'm finally totally accepted. And I totally accept this other person too. This mushy, kind of, you know, first version kind of love, first phase kind of love. But it's very powerful. There's no way that one can just say, well, it's only love or it's only this for somebody that is under the spell of the adolescent lover archetype. Oh, they will leave family. They will leave their wife. They will leave their husband. They will leave their job. They will even destroy themselves for this archetype. So it can be very serious. It can be very serious when we live out the surface version of this archetype. But love will be desperate, always desperate, caught in a web of obsession, distant in pursuit, fear of abandonment. One falls in love and sees the ideal lover that is actually within, sees it, but thinks that that's what it is out here. That's who it is out there. But as soon as there's an experience of challenge, frustration, anger, depression, we wonder what happened to our lover who loves us and who we loved unconditionally. Oh, this lover has gone. And we become bewildered, scared, and sometimes even rageful. Anybody know this archetype? It's interesting when it becomes more than a word, isn't it? It's a reality. Yeah, this isn't stuff just in books. This is in our heart and soul. This is how we relate to one another, you see? This is about maturity and immaturity. And these archetypes are so powerful, we can be ruled by them, as I said before, a lifelong. So best we move through them and move on. But, I wouldn't have any work to do if you all did that. Now, mature love is integrating the mature side of that archetype, the lover archetype. One doesn't allow for the ideal lover within to be identified with the partner. The relationship in the mature love becomes a way that we both learn from the inner lover archetype. Mature love grows with the truth. It's not afraid of the truth. Mature love is a relationship that is nurtured by the grieving tears of acceptance. Acceptance of each other in the concrete and vulnerable here and now. Okay? Whereby when we meet our partner, we meet a possibility of learning about balance and about integrating the masculine and feminine divine energies within the lover archetype who is androgynous, male and female. Okay? So a lot of our work, I think a lot of spiritual work, is allowing ourselves to name where we're caught up in the immature lover archetype. Name that so that we can move on. Okay? And of course, the result, of course, is much more peace of mind, much more centeredness, right? Less demandingness of someone to meet this impossible task that only the inner divine feminine and masculine can meet. Okay? Now, a word about the mother archetype. And we'll end today's discussion on these dream figures. The mother archetype is powerful in all the cultures. The Christian Madonna, Sarah of the Jewish Bible, the Greek mother god, Demeter, sister of Zeus. Now, if you're a sister of Zeus, you're pretty darn powerful. Now, the mother archetype, and men, listen up, exists in you, in me, in all of us, the mother archetype. All of the archetypes, all of those exist within us. And if we do not attend to this mother inside of us, we can live out a surface version of that, and even a mentally and emotionally ill version of that, if we do not recognize and revere and honor the inner feminine, both male and female, all of us. There's also an inner masculine. We'll talk about that next week. There are pitfalls in the surface version of the mother archetype. Now, positively, the mother archetype, or the mother universal image within, suggests our need to nurture, our need to be generous, and our need to give emotionally. Every one of us has that deep interior spiritual need. But watch out. Watch out for the surface version of this mother archetype. If someone gets totally slam dunked by the mother archetype, bad stuff can happen. Bad stuff can happen. First of all, one can be the chronic griever, the martyr mother, empty nest syndrome. The negative mother can be resentful that the children have left, or the mother who doesn't want her children, okay, has somehow neglected her motherness inside of her. There's the destructive mother inside, the inner mother, who is critical and withholds approval. Nothing is ever enough. And there's also the rescuer mother. Oh, wow. The rescuer mother always finds losers who are overly needy, who she can save. She gets in a relationship not out of love, but out of someone else's neediness. I see this most frequently. And it can be within a male whose mother is upfront in the archetypal realm, right? Who will only be with others who are needy. Or it can be a woman who are only with those who are, so it's always folks who are overly needy they can rescue. They can be susceptible to depression, mental and emotional illness, fatigue, headaches, ulcers, high blood pressure, back pain. That's Dr. Gene Bolan, who has written extensively on both the inner divine male and masculine and feminine figures within. Ways to grow. That's what we want to learn about. Are there ways to grow? What are the ways to grow and learn from these archetypes that we need to integrate into our psyche and integrate into our world? Well, in terms of the mother archetype, we need to learn to let go and let grow. Dr. Gene Bolan's expression. Let go and let grow. Self-parenting and self-nurturing. You know? Begin to self-parent. Self-nurture. They weren't there. They didn't get it. You can't just go around asking everybody else for it and angry about it. Eventually start working on yourself and letting yourself parent. You have an inner parent, an ideal parent, who is wonderful and marvelous and healthy if you just recognize this androgynous male and female parent within, who is not critical, not judgmental, never violent, never aggressive, never abandoning. That's the surface version of the archetype where we get slam dunked and we're only wanting to live one aspect of ourself and not all the richness that is within the spiritual realm. It's about integration. It's about integration. Bringing together in a unity these powerful forces within.